So we're going to talk this evening about thinking outside the box. The room looks a little bit like a box, doesn't it? Except the Buddha's at the front, leading us the way out of the box. So we'll start off with a little bit of silent meditation to calm our mind, and then we'll get into the talk. And then afterwards, we'll have a little bit of questions and answers. Well, questions at least. The answers are not guaranteed. Okay, so sit up straight. Your hands, the right on the left, the thumbs are touching, like this. And that's in your lap. Keep your head kind of level. And lower your eyes. And for a moment, just check in with your body. See if there's tension anywhere. And if there is, then let that tension go. And then focus your attention on your breath. Just observing the gentle flow of your breath as you inhale and exhale. Not forcing your breath, just letting it be, but paying attention to it. If you get distracted, you start thinking of something else, just notice that you've gotten distracted, but bring your focus back home to the breath. And in this way, let your mind settle down. Because by keeping the mind on one object, in this case the breath, then the mind becomes quieter and more peaceful. So do this just for a few minutes, so that we can settle down before we talk about the Dharma. And then let's cultivate our motivation and think that we will share together this evening so that we can learn how to be a good human being. Learn how to open our hearts to others. How to live a meaningful life, how to understand the nature of reality. And so let's do all of this with the long-term intention to progress on the path to full awakening so that we will be most capable of being of the greatest benefit to each and every living being. Let's make that our long-term motivation. Then slowly open your eyes and come out of So, I know the talk is for young adults. So at 64, I guess I could still qualify. Some of you look like you're almost as old as I am. But we're all still young, huh? So I was thinking, you know, young adults, like what's on your mind when you're a young adult? So I think a lot of it is focused on what am I going to do with my life? Yeah, because there's a lot of pressure from family and society to do something, to be someone. So what am I going to do? Who am I going to be? What career shall I have? I don't know what kind of career. I'm kind of interested in this, but I don't know if I want to do it for 40 years. So what kind of career do I really want to work? Well, no, but I have to. But I do want to work because maybe, you know, I need some money and I enjoy certain interests and fields that maybe I can work in and can contribute to. And so a lot of questions about career and work. Is that on your mind? And so what shall I study? Where shall I study? What shall I work at? Shall I be a photographer? Looking at people who are giving Dharma talks. What shall I do? Yeah. And that can be a source of worry, you know, because a lot of things hinge on it. You're not really certain what you want to do. Then there's the whole personal aspect. Yeah, who are my friends? And then probably one of the most important things, what do people think of me? Is this a big thing on your mind? What do people think of me? If you're in school, what do my classmates think of me? What do my friends think of me? What do my professors think of me? If you're working, what do my boss think of me? What do my colleagues think of me? Yeah. Always this thing of what do people think about me? I want to know what they think about me. I'm worried about what they think about me. Yeah. But that can be a source of a lot of tension. And then, of course, family issues. Yeah. How to relate you to your parents, because your parents want you to do one thing, you want to do another thing. Your parents kind of want to control your life. You don't want them to control your life, but you want them to be there for you when you need them, but not bug you when you don't need them. Yeah, and then also relationships. Shall I get married? Shall I not get married? Things about sexuality. Am I straight? Am I gay? Who shall I marry? Shall I have kids? Then maybe you get married and, oh, I'm not sure if I'm marrying the right person. But if you don't get married, all my friends are getting married, but I'm not. What's wrong with me? I shouldn't be married like everybody else is. Nobody loves me, but all the people I date are creeps. So those kind of issues. Then maybe you get married, oh, when shall I have kids? How many kids do I want to have? I'm not sure if I want to have kids, but my parents want me to have kids. But you have kids and then you lose your freedom for the next 40 years. Yeah. I don't know if I really want that. Who
who wants to raise teenagers anyway? Yeah, they're great when they're babies, but teenagers, forget it. So, you know, all these kind of questions come up, huh? Yeah. And what's the topic of all these questions? What's the word that you hear the most in all these questions? What's the main center thing about this, these questions? I. All the questions are about me. What I should do. What's going to make me happy? What am I going to become? What do other people think of me? They're all about me, aren't they? Circling around. What just happens to be the center of the universe? Me. Right? One of the difficulties about focusing around me all the time is that it makes us slightly crazy. Yeah? Because there's over 7 million human beings on this planet. Yeah? Over 7 million, that's a lot. And we're focused on one. One. Yeah, worrying about one sentient being. Who just, by the way, is me. Who happens to be the most important sentient being among all 7 billion, right? When we focus on me in that way, yeah, and I said it drives us slightly crazy, it's because we're putting too much attention on one thing. Yeah. Yes, we are important. Each of us as an individual are important. We all have the Buddha nature. We all have the possibility to become fully awakened beings. In that way, we're each very important. But when we focus on me, what shall I do? What's going to make me happy? What do other people think of me? Who am I going to marry? What am I going to do as a career? All of that stuff. Yeah. By worrying so much about that stuff, we're putting too much attention on one small speck of the universe. What do you think? Right? Wrong? Well, kind of right, yeah. I am a speck in the universe. I'm one among 7 billion. But 7 billion, and what do they all think of me? Should we go back and forth? Yeah, we go back and forth. Never really gaining a lot of clarity on this issue. And when we think about ourselves in an unhealthy, self-preoccupied way, then we become super sensitive about everything in terms of how it relates to me. And so therefore, all this worry about what do other people think of me? Yeah, look at the person on your right. Yeah, look at the person on your left. Do you worry about what anybody thinks of those two people? Huh? Do you? I don't think so. So when we just have this very small focus on ourselves, it's an unhealthy kind of focus. Who really cares what other people think about me? I mean, if I don't care what the person on the left thinks, and the person on the right thinks, and the person in front of me thinks, no, if I don't care about what people think about the person on the right, the left, and I don't care about what people think about the person on the right, or the person in front of me, or the person in back of me, why do I think that all of them are concerned about what they think of me? If I'm not concerned about what other people think of them, why do I think what they think of me is so important? Yeah? Well, because I'm me. Yeah, but I'm one person. So what would other people think of me? But this is something really important to think about, especially in your young adult times, because we make a lot of decisions in our life, especially in young adult times, based on what we think other people think we should do, or what we think they think we should be. So instead of being in touch with what kind of person do I want to be as a human being, and how am I going to create the causes for being that kind of being? In other words, what are my values? What are my principles? How do I want to live my life in the truest, most beneficial way? Instead of asking those kind of questions, which are important, we're always running around, oh, do they like me? Do they like me? Oh no, maybe they think I'm weird. Oh no, maybe they think I'm ugly. Oh no, I said the wrong thing to this person, they're never going to speak to me again. Oh, somebody else got the promotion, I didn't. Oh, somebody's dating the guy that I used to date. Oh, like him anyway, good, she can have him. But then, oh, what do they all think of me? It's exhausting, isn't it? Worrying about what other people think of us. Especially because we can't control any of it. Whatever they think, right? Can you crawl inside their heads? Inside their minds somewhere, push a few buttons and make them think something different? No. So what do? You guess what you think they think you should be. Yeah? And then you have your idea of what you think they think you should be, and you try and become what you think they think you should be. Whether you are that person or want to be that person or not, tough luck. You know, you try and make yourself into your image of what you think you should be. Doesn't that make you a little bit crazy? I think more than a little bit crazy. Yeah. It makes us waste our entire lives worrying about, you know, pleasing people. But not pleasing people because we genuinely care about them. Pleasing people because we want them to like us. And why do we want them to like us? Not so we can have good relationships and grow together and help each other learn. Yeah. But we want them to like us because then we'll think we're an okay person. In other words, rather than looking inside and saying, what are my habits? What are my tendencies? What do I usually think about? How do I act? Are my actions something commendable? Are they not commendable? Instead of, you know, looking in on ourselves and learning to evaluate ourselves, we focus outwards on what other people think of us. Are you getting what I'm talking about? And because we're out of touch with ourselves, then we look at other people to tell us who we are, or at least who they think we think, at least who they think. See, I told you we seem crazy. We, you know, instead of focusing on ourselves, we focus on what we think they think we should be. Yeah. Without even asking ourselves if we want to be that. Yeah. Without asking ourselves if what they want us to be is something beneficial or not beneficial or ethical or unethical. But we're so out of touch with ourselves, we want them to tell us who we are. But when we rely on other people to tell us who we are, we get very confused because everybody has a different idea about us. Yeah. So, I don't know how many people there are in this room. A couple hundred, maybe? A few hundred, 200, 300, whatever. So you're thinking, well, what do they all think of me? So let's say there's, we'll compromise, 250 people in the room, okay? And we're all thinking, what do they think of me? So among 250 people, you're probably going to have about 500 opinions. Do you think all those 500 opinions of you are going to agree with each other? So then, if their opinions of me are right, and I rely on them to tell me who I am, then which of those 500 opinions that the 250 people have is the right one? Who am I really? Okay? You see what I said? It makes you crazy? Because I know from my own experience that I've had people within a very short period of time give me totally opposite feedback about what they think of me. Yeah, totally opposite feedback. I remember one time there was a situation, I can't remember what the situation was, but I was doing something with somebody else, and then the next day, one person called me and said, oh, you handled that situation so well. And then 10 minutes later, somebody else called me and said, you botched up that situation so badly. So which one's true? Do I think, oh, I'm great because one person praised me? Or do I think, oh, I'm a disaster because one person criticized me? Or do I spend hours worrying about it? Oh, maybe this one's right. Oh, maybe that one's right. Yeah, then the next day still, oh, I don't know, maybe this one's right. Maybe I better ask some other people. So then you ask 10 more people. And of those 10 people, one tells you, yeah, you did a good job. Another tells you, no, you didn't go and do another job. And a third one says, I didn't even see you do anything. And then you get mad, you didn't see me do anything. Oh, how could you ignore me? Yeah? And our whole life goes by worrying about what other people think about us. Instead of looking inside and saying, you know, reflecting, evaluating ourselves. Did I act with a kind motivation? Yeah. Did I have other people's welfare in mind? Or was I manipulating people to get what I want? Yeah. Because we know how to manipulate people, don't we? We do it all the time. We put on a face and we learn how to work it so that they will give us what we want. And meanwhile, we'll come out looking like we're so benevolent. Yeah. Happens in business deals all the time, doesn't it? You're working on a business deal with a client. Oh, I'm going to give you a special deal. Yeah? Actually, you're charging him twice as much, but you're telling him you're giving him a discount from three times as much. Oh, it's usually this cost. I'm going to give you a discount. Yeah? And you manipulate them. And then they think, oh, this guy's giving me a discount. Yes, so I'll sign on with that plan. That looks good. And then you do that. Then you're very proud of yourself. Oh, look, I closed that deal. What a good person I am. But when you go home at night, you think, I closed the deal, but in a kind of not so nice way, because I actually lied to the other person and told them I was giving them a discount, when it was a discount from three times the normal price. Yeah, and I lied. I cheated that person. My boss is happy. My boss is jumping up and down saying, oh, you're great. But I have to live with myself at night. And I go home at night and I don't feel good about what I'm doing. Even though everybody else in my life thinks what I'm doing is great, because I'm bringing in the dough. Yeah. This happened to you? Oh, now you're all looking. Happens, doesn't it? Or in social situations, yeah, we manipulate people, we lie to them to get them to do what we want them to do. But at the end of the day, we're the people who have to live with ourselves. Isn't it? When we go to bed at night, we're with ourselves. When we die at the end of our life, we're with ourselves. What other people think of us doesn't matter one single bit. But you might say, well, but it does. After I die, I want a nice obituary in the paper. Yeah. I want, oh, she accomplished this, she did this, she did this, she did that. I want everybody to, you know, remember me after I die and mourn me after I die. And all the people who were mean to me after I die, I want them to feel so guilty. Do you think after you die, you're going to be around to enjoy all of that? Yeah? Do you think you're going to be around to see, to watch? Oh, there's everybody mourning me because they all think I'm so wonderful. They're the people who harm me, feeling guilty because they harmed somebody who was so wonderful. Because look, the obituary. I look so good in the obituary. Yeah. They chose the right photograph for me in the obituary. I look really good. Yeah. Do you think you're going to be out floating around in the room somewhere, looking down, commenting about all of this? When you die, you have other things on your mind. What people think of you is forget it. You leave all of that behind. You may be incredibly famous, you may be incredibly popular, you may have climbed on the corporate ladders, but you're not going to benefit from any of that when you die. Because the only thing that comes with us when we die is the karma we create. Yeah, the imprints of our karmic actions. That's what comes with us when we die. Other people's opinion doesn't come with us. What, you think when you get born somewhere, you pop out of your mother's womb, if you're born as a human being, they're going to look at you and say, oh, you were so-and-so. I read that beautiful obituary about you in your last life. Yeah. You think they're going to say that? And even if they say that, what are you going to say in return? I say this because, you know, our life is not very long. Yeah. And we don't know when we're going to die. And yet we have tremendous potential and possibility with this life. So it's important that we use this life well, that we don't waste our time. Yeah. Now, I know when you're young, you feel invincible. Because I know when I'm old, I also feel invincible. Because, yes, death is going to happen, but it happens to other people. Somehow, I'm going to avoid it. Do you have that feeling? Yeah? Other people die, but me, somehow, it's not going to happen to me. A little bit unrealistic. And so thinking, you know, when I leave this life, and I don't know when it's going to be, what kind of karmic imprints do I want to take with me? When I look back on my life, how am I going to feel about what I did in my life, or what I didn't do? These are important questions, because if we think about them well, then we can set good priorities and in our life, and then we can live in a very meaningful way. If we don't think about these things, then we're just going to rush around looking for pleasure all the time, worrying about what other people think about us, trying to get everything we like, getting rid of everything we don't like, creating a lot of karma in the process of it. And then still not feeling really good about ourselves. When I was little, you know, I remember looking at my dad, and there was something about my dad that I felt like he regretted something, not doing something. Life. And when I was little, I didn't know what it was. I think I figured it out a few years ago. But when I was little, I didn't know what it was. And I thought, you know, I never want to die with regret. I don't want to go through my life and then look back at it and say, oh, I made the wrong decision way back when. And that took me on a path that actually I didn't want to be on. Yeah. And I thought, I really want to make good decisions in my life. And even when I make bad decisions and things turn out as a mess, I want to learn from the situation. Yeah, because yes, we try and avoid bad decisions, but sometimes we make them. And sometimes we make a good decision, but we can't control all the circumstances, so things don't turn out the way we would like. And I thought, you know, when this kind of thing is going to happen, and when it does, I want to learn from it. So that at the end of my life, I don't have any deep-seated regrets about how I lived. I don't want to regret how I treated other people. If I treated people poorly, I want to correct it while I'm still alive. I want to make amends. And if I made a decision and things turn out a mess, I want to learn from that decision and go forward in another way. I don't want to spend my life trying to rationalize and justify the bad decisions I made in an effort to try and feel good about myself, because that's not going to work. Are you getting what I mean? Yeah? Because I've observed, you know, over the years, because I give Dharma talks and a lot of places and work with a lot of different kinds of people. And some people go through their lives making mistakes, piling up regret after regret, but never making amends, not learning from their situation, their poor decisions. But instead they go through their whole lives blaming other people for their misfortune. Do you know people like that? Who go through most of their life, and when things don't turn out the way they want, and you can see it's due to how they're treating other people, or due to their not thinking clearly, instead of being able to take responsibility themselves, they blame other people. And, you know, we can blame other people all we want in an attempt to feel good about ourselves, in an attempt to justify our own actions, or whitewash our own bad behavior. But that's not going to really solve the problem. Because the problem needs to be solved by being honest with ourselves, and then making amends, and then learning from the situation, and going on from there. But when we spend our whole life blaming other people for what doesn't go well in our life, then we can never grow. We can never learn. Because we're always making ourselves into a victim, because my problems are due to other people. Yeah? And that's really that's a dead-end road, blaming other people for our problems. Because when we blame other people, we're making ourselves into a victim. Why do I have problems? Because of what other people did. How do I solve my problems? I can't solve my problems because they're caused by other people. So other people have to change. They have to change for my problems to be solved. How am I going to get them to change? Can you get other people to change? We may pester them a lot. We may nag them. We may drive them crazy. We may yell and scream. Can any of that make them change? No. So when we blame our problems on other people and make ourselves into a victim, then it really is dead end. There's no way to go, because we can't control other people and make them different than the way they are. And whereas if we're able to look at things and see what our role was and accept some responsibility for our role and think about things clearly, learn from the situation, then we can go on in our life with a smile, with a happy mind. So it's all our decision. It's all up to us what we want to do. There's a certain thing, you know, when we blame other people for our problems. It's like, okay, then, I have this horrible problem, but it's due to them, so I don't have to do anything, because it's all their fault. I can just sit here and luxuriate in self-pity. Because my problems are due to them, so I can just sit here, suck my thumb, and feel sorry for myself because of how awful other people treat me.
If you want to write something down on a piece of paper,
forward, then that's okay too. Or maybe do we have a couple of ushers who can pick up questions? Anybody want to ask something from the floor? I should also tell you, this is your time to ask questions. So after the talk is over, don't line up here and say, oh, I have a question. And I couldn't ask it in front of the group, because what would they think of me? But instead, when you ask a question, realize, you know, that you're asking something that probably other people in the room are interested in, and they would appreciate somebody asking that question. Yes.
Thank you for your great talk so far.
I can't hear so well when people are sitting far away. Can you come closer and tell me, and then I'll repeat it to them.
So what I wanted to ask you, so your talk was based about what we think, what other people think of us.
Uh-huh.
Now, and it's directed at young people. Yeah. Now, I'm not one of those really young people, but I have a young person at home. I have my son, who I need to guide, uh-huh, without him second-guessing what he thinks that I think that he ought to do. And so when he, you know, when it comes to career choice and all of these things, how do I impart that to him without myself trying to impart what I think he thinks that I think he ought to do?
So you're asking, how do you tell him what to do without it looking like you're telling him what to do?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Okay, so as a parent of a young person, how do you tell them what to do without it looking like you're telling them what to do? I think dialogue is really important, you know, and to start when it's young, and just talk about, you know, what happened today, and get your kids to talk about, you know, what they encounter, how they relate to other people, what they saw, what they're thinking about, what they're wondering about. And then ask them, well, what do you think about that? And what do you think caused that? What do you think the result of that's going to be? And what do you think was that person's motivation? And, you know, yeah, what it, you know, in other words, to encourage people to learn how to think for themselves and evaluate situations for themselves. When kids are very young, you can tell them what to do and you can instruct them on different things. When they're older, you have to do it more as a dialogue and teach them how to think clearly about situations themselves. Yeah. And then in the process of discussion, you can offer your ideas on it, but you're offering it as, well, these are my reflections, but you're entitled to your own ideas. Yeah? If you offer things like that, people are more likely to listen. When we tell people what to do or what to think, no matter what age they are, they usually don't like it. Okay. What happens when I die? Okay, well, I can't answer what happens for a specific individual, but in general, what happens? Death is the, we'll put it this way, life is our body, this physical thing, plus our consciousness, our feelings, our mental processes, and so on. Life is when our body and mind are together and depend on each other. Death is when they separate. So at the time of death, the body stays here. It gets recycled in nature. Yeah. Our consciousness goes on together with the imprints or the seeds of the actions we did. And then depending on our actions, depending on the thoughts and what's going on in our mind when we die, then different of the karmic seeds will ripen, which will influence our next birth. Yeah. So we're creating the cause for our next life right now, both in terms of the actions we're doing, because the actions leave this energy trace, for lack of a better word, the karmic seeds. And then also, we're training our mind in certain ideas and certain ways of thinking. You know, we're habituating our minds with certain things while we're alive. And depending on what we habituate ourselves with, those are the kinds of thoughts and feelings that are likely to arise at the time of death, too. And then they will influence which of the karmic seeds will ripen. Okay? So we're really creating the cause for our future life right now, which is why it's important to live an ethical life. Yeah? And to be honest with ourselves, because we can't fool karma, yeah? We can fool other people. We can make ourselves look good when we have a horrible motivation. But that doesn't fool karma, because karma is just cause and effect. That's it. I need to get my glasses so I can read the questions. How do I make myself not think about what others think of me? It's a good question. How do you, you know, get yourself to get rid of that self-preoccupation? By cultivating love and compassion for others. By thinking of the kindness of others and how our life depends upon others' kindness to us, others' effort, and so really feeling their gratitude for their kindness, really being aware of how they keep us alive and how our life and our well-being is due to the kindness of others, and thereby wanting to repay their kindness. Yeah. And so by developing a kind heart and thinking, you know, what can I do to make the world a better place? What can I offer to help other living beings be happier? When we can do that, when we can focus our mind more with genuine care and affection on others and want to work for their benefit, then there's not so much time and space in our mind just to think about ourselves and what they think about us. Okay? Also, I find for myself, if I start worrying about, oh, what does this person think of me? What does that person think of me? Then I ask myself, well, how do I benefit if they have a good idea of me? And how does that harm me if they have a bad idea about me? And if I think, well, what kind of benefit do I get from other people having a good, you know, a good idea about me? Does it make me healthy? No. Does it help me to live a long life? No. Does their good opinion about me make me a better person? No. Does it help me to create better karma and prepare for my next life? No. Does it help me work, you know, towards liberation from cyclic existence and towards the full awakening of the Buddha? No. So what use Is others good opinion of me?
Zero.
So why am I worrying about it? Drop it. Drop it. Yeah? Okay.
Or somebody has a bad idea about me. Then I say, then I ask myself, is what they say true?
Well, parts of it maybe.
And then I say to myself, well, children, you always want to improve yourself. Here's somebody telling you how. Maybe you should learn something from what they're saying. And trying to learn from the feedback. Or if they're saying things to me that are not true, you know, they have a bad opinion of me, but what they're thinking is really off the wall, then again, not worrying about it, because if it doesn't apply to me, why am I sticking it on myself? No reason. Drop it. Why do people think differently even when they see or hear the same thing? Because, basically because, everybody is filtering things through their own perspective. Everybody's looking at the same situation through the filter of how does it affect me. So, since there's a bunch of different individuals, and since the situation affects them all in different ways, then they're going to have different opinions about the situation. Okay? It doesn't mean that any of those opinions are right. It just means that people are biased. Yeah? We look at things through how it affects me, as if we were the most important people in the world. And this is the advantage of learning to practice, you know, the Dharma, and really engage in the teachings and in the process of improving ourselves, is that then we learn to have a much more flexible mind, so we can see situations from many different perspectives. And we can see that different people have different feelings in the same situation. And different people have different needs in the same situation. And different people are going to pick out different things to focus on in the same situation. So when we stop being so self-centered, then we become much more flexible and tolerant, and can see things from many different perspectives, and that enables us to be of greater benefit to others. If I don't care about what other people think about me and continue to be and act as who I am, will I become ignorant? Good question. If your behavior is rotten, and your motivations are rotten, and you don't care about the effects of your behavior on other people, because you don't care beans about other people at all, then not caring what they think about you will make you very ignorant. Okay? But if you care about, you have a sense of your own personal integrity, and if you care about how your actions affect others, not because you want those people to think well about you, but you care about how your actions affect them because you care about them, and you sincerely want others to be happy, then, yeah, you will be able to reflect on your own behavior and your own motivations, and change them and transform them because you have love and compassion for others. And in that way, you won't become more ignorant. Yeah. But if you just have this flippant idea, like, I'll give you examples. Sometimes you hear people say, well, I'm just a short-tempered person, and I get angry, and that's the way I am, and I don't care if you like me or not like me because of it. That's the way I am. Yeah. Do you think that way of not caring about others, what others think is good? It's not. Okay. Because the person is being entirely self-centered. Oh, I'm just angry. You don't like it. Too bad. Yeah. You're my brother. You're my sister. You're my husband. You're my wife. You're related to me. You just have to accept me the way I am. And if I yell and scream and blame you for things you didn't do, tough luck. Huh? There's no loving kindness in that kind of attitude. That's just total self-centered rubbish. Yeah. So that kind of attitude definitely us more ignorant. But if we really care about others' feelings and we want them to be happy, and then we see, oh, I said something that has made somebody confused or unhappy, I need to go back and talk about it with them. I want to work it out with them. Not because I'm attached to my reputation, but because I care about them as a human. Okay, so you see, these two things are different. Attachment to our reputation is very different than caring about others sincerely. They're two different things. And we have to learn to see that difference within ourselves. If a negative act has been done and the impact is irreversible, other than being remorseful, what else could be done? Is it bad karma forever?
Forever. You're going to hell. Irredeemable.
No. Karma is not cast in concrete. Okay? Karma means action. Actions are caused. Yeah. Everything that is caused is impermanent, is transient, doesn't last forever, has the nature of change. So if even when we do negative actions, we can't go back and undo them, because what's been done has been done. But from our own side, in terms of karma, we can regret what we did. We can generate a good intention towards the other person and wish them well. We make a determination not to do the action again in the future, or at least to try hard not to do it. And then we have some kind of remedial behavior. In addition, if we can go to the other person and apologize and make amends directly with them, then we do that. If it's a situation where we don't know where the other person is anymore, or where they've died, or maybe they're not ready to talk to us after what happened, we can still purify from our side by changing our attitude towards them. You know, and generating a heart of loving kindness. And so that helps to purify the negative karma so that it doesn't, doesn't weigh on us forever. Okay, as a mother, what is my role and how to influence my child to think and to be responsible for their own actions? First of all, by becoming the person, the kind of person that you want your child to be, you becoming that kind of person first. Okay? In other words, your kids are going to learn from their example of watching you. If you tell your kids one thing, but you do another thing, they're going to learn from what you do, not what you say. My mother used to say, "Do what I say, not as I do." But I said, "I'm going to watch what you do because, you know, actions speak louder than words." So I watched what my parents did. And in many ways, I learned many good things from how they did things. And I also learned what I don't want to do and what I don't want to be by watching them do things that I thought were harmful. Yeah. So I learned both things from my parents. Yeah. So, you know, the best way to raise a child is to try and become the kind of person that you would like your child to be. If you want your child to be honest, you be honest. If you want your child to be kind, you be kind. Yeah. Parents always want to take their kids to Sunday school and drop them off and have other people teach them about Buddhism and about being a good person. Meanwhile, they go down to that casino down there, you know, and leave their kid at Sunday school and, you know, at the temple. That's not going to work. Yeah, that's not going to work. Okay, so this person is saying, how do we help other people get out of their self-victimizing frame of mind? Okay, so other people who feel sorry for themselves and blame their problems on others, how do we help them get out of their state of mind? Interesting how we want to help others who feel sorry for themselves and blame others. Who are you most likely to influence? Yourself or others? What I'm asking is why, first question, I will answer that question, but my first question is, why are we asking how I can help other people get out of their victim stance? And why aren't we asking, how do I get myself out of my own victim stance? Okay? Because very often we're really interested in helping all these other people who have so many bad habits. Yeah? They feel sorry for themselves. They blame their problems on other people. Especially they blame their problems on me. I'm married to this guy. He has such a self-victim thing. He blames all of his problems on me. But how do I help him to stop blaming his problems on me? What's that question really asking? Okay. So I really want to emphasize, you know, we got to look at ourselves first. Sometimes I give talks on anger, you know, like how working with anger, and you kind of see in the audience somebody's, "Hey, honey, she's talking about you." Poke up and say, hey, listen to what she's saying. Don't get mad at me so much. Okay, we're very concerned because we're so benevolent and kind with helping people, you know, get unstuck for their problems. Meanwhile, we have the same problem. Okay, so first of all, it's like, let's work on ourselves. Okay. Second of all, in the process of working on ourselves, if we encounter other people who are stuck
in the same way we are, and constantly blaming others, constantly whining about their problems. There are some people, I call them the yes but people. Yeah, because they know two words, yes but. Okay, I have this problem and this problem and this problem and this problem and please help me. And then you give them some advice and they say, yes, but I can't do it because, oh, please help me, please help me. Then you give another suggestion. Yeah. And their advice is usually, oh, so-and-so is too mean for me, the world's unfair to me, all these people are doing this and that to me, and I don't know how to solve the problem. And you give them some advice. Yes, but, is their reply. Yeah. Any of you yes, but people? So, yeah, I'm a sucker. It usually takes me two times for somebody to say yes, but. Sometimes I'm a slow learner, I don't get it the first yes, but. But after the second yes, but, then I know what I'm saying is useless. And then I ask them, I say, what do you think? This is your problem. You're an intelligent person. You're a creative person. What ideas do you have about how to remedy this? Tell me some of your ideas and we'll discuss those together. And I think that's a very good way to pull somebody out of their self-victimizing role. Get them to offer some suggestions themselves about what they could do differently or how they could handle the situation differently. And when they start telling me everything that the other person did wrong, they did this and they did that, and it's not fair, and on and on and on and on. And then I go, yes, but we're talking about you, we're not talking about them. Tell me what you think, tell me what you feel. I don't want to hear about what they did, because we can't control what they did. Okay? So you engage them in thinking for themselves. How do we control our temper when we're dealing with someone that we don't like? We clobber them. I'm joking. Okay, there's a book. Do we have any copies of Working with Anger on the back table? Do we? Oh, that one is Don't Believe Everything You Think. No. Oh, you have the small Working with Anger. Do you have the big Working with Anger? No? Why not? I thought we brought some from the U.S. here. What's wrong? All these people don't do what I want them to do and bring the books here when I tell them to bring the book. Oh. Okay, so there's the small Working with Anger on the back table. You can get that one. Then you can go on Amazon and order the more elaborate book called Working with Anger. Okay, and that will give you many more ideas than I can talk about in just a short period of time. However, another idea is, next weekend we're giving the book launch on Don't Believe Everything, no, on Living with an Open Heart. So you can come to that talk because we'll be talking about some ways to work with anger there. Right? Any other talks that involve with anger? I usually wind up talking about anger somewhere in most talks. We just have to get lucky. Yeah, but there's many ways to work with your anger. You know, first thing is you have to notice that you're angry and think about the disadvantages of being angry. And then, you know, really care about the influence of your actions on other people. That will help you calm down and restrain. Okay. But read the book. I'm looking for some short questions here. This is the same one about how can I help somebody else change. How can I help you change? Yeah, me, I don't have any problem. How can I help you change? You should do this, you should do that, you should do this, you should do that. I have advice for all of you. And then you come, I give you my advice at the Dharma talk. And then you go out and you do whatever you want anyway. I can't change you. I can't change any of you. You have to change yourself. This is a good question. How do we evaluate or think over what we've done at the end of the day? Okay, let's start with the beginning of the day. At the beginning of the day, it's very helpful when you first get up in the morning, take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha so that you're clear about your spiritual direction and have clear in your mind that you want to rely on the Buddha Dharma and Sangha for your spiritual direction. Then generate your motivation and think about what's important. First, it's very important today that I don't harm anybody. That I don't harm them physically, I don't harm them verbally, and I do my best not to harm them with what I think either. Not to have harmful thoughts towards them. Then, also what's important today is to benefit others as much as I can, in whatever big or small way is possible. Third, today what's important is to continually cultivate an altruistic intention. In Buddhism we call it bodhicitta, the intention to become a fully awakened Buddha for the benefit of all beings. So that's important for me to do today. And those three things, not harming, benefiting, generating the altruistic intention, those are the most important things I do today. They are more important than whether I close the business deal. They're more important than whether people praise me or blame me. They're more important than my reputation. They're more important than my fun. Yeah? That I don't harm others, that I help them as much as possible, and that I generate bodhicitta. So I'm going to try and keep those three things as my priorities in my life and living according to them. Yeah. And then you do that as much as you can throughout the day. Then in the evening, you sit down and you reflect on the day. Oh, let me go back to the morning again. Okay. Another thing that's helpful to do in the morning is I'll think about who am I likely to see today and what kind of things am I likely to be engaged in, and are any of them the kind of things that are going to push my buttons? Yeah, in other words, am I going to be meeting with somebody I don't like? Yeah, if I'm going to be seeing somebody I don't like, then I think in the morning, okay, I have to be very careful. Because usually when I see this person, I get angry, I blame them, I get irritated, and when I go home and I see my family, I'm in a bad mood with my family. So I don't want to continue being like that. I want to be able to see this person and just be able to deal with it in a fair way, in a peaceful way, and not let my mind be disturbed. So how can I do that today? And then I think about the different Dharma antidotes that I've read. And so the book that's very good to read for that one is Don't Believe Everything You Think, because he talks about a lot of different situations there and gives a lot of advice about how to think in those situations. So I'll reflect on them if I how no particular thing is likely to happen that day. Then, at the end of the day, you sit down and you think, okay, I had that motivation in the morning. How well was I able to live up to it during the day? Yeah. And you think, okay, I had a determination not to harm somebody. Well, I started to get angry at this one person. In the past, I would have really said something quite sharp to them, but today I didn't. I controlled my mouth. Yeah, and I didn't say something nasty to them. Good for me. You pat yourself on the back. But I still have some bad feelings for them because I got angry. So before I go to bed, because I don't want to go to bed angry, then I have to do one of the meditations about working with anger so that I can counteract my anger. So when I go to sleep, I'm not going to sleep angry. Okay? So you rejoice at what you did well. Yeah? Because, and you know, we should rejoice at what we did well. Rejoice at our own virtuous actions, because that way we encourage ourselves to continue to do well in the future. And then whenever we made a mistake or we messed up, then to have a sense of regret, you know, change our attitude towards the person, have a determination not to do it again, and do some kind of remedial action, yeah, to purify that karma. And then that way we learn from our mistakes. Okay, so there are moments in which we are worried about how others think about us in the work environment. For example, the superiors. How can we adjust the mindset, especially when it comes to mistakes made that may affect our performance evaluation? Okay. So, I think, you know, again, it's a thing of, I have to look at my own behavior. And did I do something at work today that I don't feel good about? You know, was I lax about something? Did I have a bad attitude? Did I not fulfill my responsibility, or did I blame somebody else? And if I did, then I have to own that and make amends for it. And if I made a mistake, go to my boss or whoever it was and say, I made a mistake and I realize what that mistake is and I'm going to do my best to counteract it. Yeah, that's much better than trying to hide your mistake and blaming it on another colleague. Yeah, it's like, you know, when we make mistakes, we make mistakes. People know it. Yeah. I live in a community, in a monastery, you know. You try and hide somebody else, hide your mistakes from the other people in the monastery, forget it. We all know each other very well. We know each other's mistakes. It's the same way in a family, or the same way when you know you're at work with people that you get to know very well. We see people's mistakes, and they see our mistakes. So what are we going to do? Pretend we didn't make mistakes? Yeah, I think it's much better just to own our mistakes and say, I made a mistake, and I'm regretful of it. I know, personally speaking, I respect people much more if they can own their mistake than if they try and cover up their mistake. Because often you can tell when somebody's trying to whitewash their mistake. Yeah, they get defensive, they start explaining themselves, yes, but this person did this and this and that and that and that, and they go off on these long explanations about why they had to do the thing they did. And I know when somebody's doing that, it's because they're trying to justify their mistake and talk me into believing whatever it is. And it's much easier if they just say, I made a mistake.
And I catch myself doing that sometimes too, explaining, but you don't understand because this and that and the other thing, blah, 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 blah. This one, she's it. I made a mistake. I see it. Sorry. Okay, one more question, then we're going to have to stop. Then you can all be mad at me because you all asked your questions and I didn't answer. And it's the other people's fault because they asked questions and I paid attention to them. How does question, how do you snap somebody out of self-pity? Can somebody help me? I'm feeling very sorry for myself because I didn't answer all these questions and you're not helping. I'm a very good Dharma teacher because of it. What do? I feel so sorry for myself. How do you snap somebody else out of self-pity? Again, how can we help them stop feeling sorry for themselves? Not how can I stop feeling sorry for myself? There's so many benevolent people that want to help other people with their bad habits. Yeah? How about helping ourselves with our own bad habits? Yeah. How about the question being, how can I develop more patience and tolerance for people who feel sorry for themselves? How about that question? It's much easier to say, how can I get them to stop feeling self-pity, than to say, how can I be more patient and tolerant when I'm with somebody who feels sorry for themselves? Isn't it? Much easier. How do I fix them? Because I don't like being around people who feel sorry for themselves. It drives me crazy. Does it drive you crazy? Hello? Does it drive you crazy? I'm talking about their faults, so you can answer. Because I know you don't have any faults. I know that already. So, you know, how do you feel when you're with somebody who feels sorry for you? Themselves. Does it drive you crazy? I hate it. This is one thing that really drives me crazy. When people, no, you know why I hate it so much? Because I do it. Yeah. If you ever want to have a pity party, call me. I will arrange your pity party. I'm an expert at pity parties. That's why I hate when other people have them, because I see myself in them. I'm telling the truth. It would be so much easier to blame them and pretend I didn't feel sorry for myself. But this is the truth. Okay. So my struggle is, how do I become more patient and tolerant when people who feel sorry for themselves, when they're driving me crazy because all they do is whine. They're adults and all they sound like 2-year-olds. Oh, but then it's okay to do something. I don't. I'm so stupid. So how do I feel more compassion for these people? How do I stop my own pity parties? Because when I'm into a pity party, I make other people feel the way I feel when they're at their pity party. So how do I deal with my own pity party? I feel so sorry for myself because I have to deal with all these people who feel sorry for themselves. And they're so unpleasant. Poor me. I live in this monastery full of people who feel sorry for themselves. Don't you feel sorry for me to have to live with all these people? Some self-pity comment. Give me some pity. Okay. Now the question is, how do I develop more compassion? Compassion doesn't mean I let them go on with their pity parties. That's not necessarily compassionate. to let them go on with it. The thing is, how could I have compassion instead of irritation with those people? Because with compassion, I really care about them. With irritation, I don't care about them, I care about me. Okay? So, we need to end now. So, let's have a short 2-minute meditation. I call it digestion meditation. So think about something you heard in the talk so that you can take it home with you and make it part of your life. Okay? Just a short meditation. And then that's rejoice that we were able to spend the evening doing something really meaningful. And let's leave this evening with a renewed determination to work on ourselves, to free ourselves from our bad habits and our afflicted mental states. Let's leave tonight with a renewed determination to cultivate a kind heart and to cultivate compassion. And as we rejoice for the positive energy, the good karma, the merit that we created this evening, let's send it out and share it with all living beings. So you can imagine the good energy we created is like a light at the center of your chest. And you radiate that out and it touches all the other living beings. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and